The Dharma, incomparably profound and exquisite, is rarely met with even in hundreds of thousands of millions of kalpas. We now can see it, hear it, accept it, and hold it. May we realize the true mind of the Tathagata. Today is day 5. We're whizzing through this session, the 7-day session here in Lawrenceville, New Jersey, at Turtleback Zendo in March 2019. And you recall that earlier in Sesshin, some quotes from the book The Quantum Revelation, A Radical Synthesis of Science and Spirituality, was shared. Specifically, this experiment that was done quite some time ago called the slit, or the two slit, or the slit experiment, in which scientists took single photons, which is said to be the smallest piece of something in the universe, and sent them through one at a time through these tiny, 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 tiny slits where they were registered on a photographic plate. And the curious thing that came out of this experiment, which flummoxed the scientists, and to a certain degree, the rest of the world, except, of course, for people like the Dalai Lama who knew it all along. Because it became patently clear and was verified through subsequent repetitions of that same experiment that the people conducting the experiment influenced the outcome. And this is now pretty well taken for granted, which is why technically double-blind experiments are the gold standard, as they're called, of research. However, even a double-blind research project can be influenced. It says something about the role of intention, or simply the role of consciousness. And what does that say for our Zen practice? As we practice Zen meditation, we start out with wonderful intentions, perhaps a little bit of romance, and learn how to do the basic physical expression of Zen, crossing our legs or whatever, and learning to focus our mind on a particular practice. And of course, here we use this extended breath practice, which is so incredibly effective. And then for a while after that, maybe a long time after that, a kind of a struggle ensues, because we have definite habitual tendencies. We have habit patterns that have been developed over however long our life has been up to that point, starting in as the tiniest child. We're influenced by our environment, whether our needs are kept or not, by the feedback we get from the people who are around us, which gives us impressions of whether we're good or bad or something else. And we grow up with this very strong set of assumptions about who we are. And the practice bumps directly into those assumptions, because we're seeking the truth of who we really are, which is way, way, way beyond any assumptions. It's the photon with no influence. Now, the photon with no influence doesn't exist. This is one of the amazing things about photons. Again, technically the tiniest building block of anything in the universe, and yet it only comes into existence when somebody's thinking about it or trying to do an experiment with it. In 1622 in Japan, the fourth son of five boys and four girls was born into a family. His father was a kind of healer, apparently practicing Chinese medicine, as was common in those days. And his elder brother, actually, Masayasu, became a Chinese physician as well, and apparently a very effective one. This kid was named Mushi, which apparently literally translated to "don't fall behind." And I suppose the fourth of five boys, there was a chance he might fall behind in some way or another. Curiously enough, his mother was known as Maya, the mother of three Buddhas, because his oldest brother, Masayasu, became a Chinese physician, or a physician, Chinese practitioner, and was therefore known as the healing Buddha. His next older brother became a Shingon priest, I think, and was therefore known as the Buddha Amida. And then Bankei, as he eventually became known, that was his Buddhist name, was Bankei Yotaku, became a Rinzai Zen master. And so he was Shakyamuni Buddha in the way of figuring things out back then. When Bankei was 10, his father died. And when he was 11, he was placed by his older brother, Masayasu, in a local school. In those days, the local schools were Confucianist schools, and they studied the Analects of Confucius, mainly by memorizing them. And so Bankei was quite curious and quite straightforward, was very much pestering the teachers about a particular comment in one of the Analects. Something about the way of, I'm paraphrasing here, liberation, something like that, is bright virtue. Bright virtue. And he was trying to figure out what the heck bright virtue is. What is bright virtue? And he kept pestering his teachers, and actually ended up going further abroad than that and going to all kinds of different spiritual masters also to ask the same question. At the same time, he also was enrolled in calligraphy studies, which apparently he hated. And he did everything he could to avoid laboriously copying all these characters with his brush. And he would try to leave the class early. Masayasu was stern about him attending, and as it turns out, he had to cross a river between his house and where the lessons were held. And so the older brother told the ferryman not to let him on the ferry boat until it was clear that the class was over. But Bankei had a mind of his own, and he reasoned that the ground must go under the river, and therefore if he just walked through the river, he would eventually come back out the other side. And that's what he did, blub, blub, blub. Finally, probably it was his older brother that was instrumental in this, but he was kicked out of the house at the age of 11. You have to remember that in those days, people didn't live that long, and to be 40 years old was pretty elderly. To be 11, you had some level of ability to function in the world on your own. Somebody who knew him took pity on him and offered him a little hut on his property to live in. And he lived there and basically called it his hermitage and spent his time searching for what on earth bright virtue meant. What is bright virtue? And among the different people that he went to question that was a Buddhist priest. And the Buddhist priest told him that the way to find out was through Zazen. Prior to that, he had studied some Shingon teachings, had attended a Shingon temple. In fact, I think he had actually gone to live there briefly when he was around 15. And so finally he started doing Zazen. And he was still struggling with what is bright virtue? What is bright virtue? He did some traveling. That was the typical way people did practice in those days. They went around to different temples and took the teachings of the incumbent priests at those temples. Often there were lecture series at the temples. This was traditional by the time Hakuin came around in the next century. And eventually, of course, it changed. But back then, that's what he did. And he traveled all over Japan searching for what on earth bright virtue was. And eventually, he had a deep enough insight that the Zen master who had told him that Zazen was the way to find out, and with whom he had stayed more than once, confirmed that he actually had had an awakening experience. But he also urged him to go see Gudo Toshoku. Gudo Toshoku you've heard of before because he was Shido Anan's teacher. And so there's a direct link between Bankei through Gudo Toshoku, Shido Anan, Dokyo Eitan, and Hakuin. When he went to find Gudo Toshoku, Gudo was off on a teaching circuit elsewhere. And so he continued on and 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 on. And eventually had met the Chinese master who had come from China, and that man had said, yes, you've had a level of opening, but it's not complete, and you need to complete it. And this is a point. Back in the early days of Zen, certainly in the early days of the Rochester Zen Center, and I think it was pretty prevalent throughout the United States, it was assumed that awakening was a one-shot deal. You did your intense Zazen, you had Kensho, and boom, you're home free. Well, not exactly, particularly not in this day and age. And when you stop and think about it, even the sixth patriarch, who had a very deep awakening when he was 19 years old and heard the itinerant pilgrim chanting the words of the Diamond Sutra, particularly the phrase that was abide, arouse the mind that abides nowhere. Arouse the mind that abides nowhere. That's that photon showing up again. And even he went and continued to search inward in the temple of the fifth patriarch, and then to have a chance to clarify what he had realized with the fifth patriarch before he was confirmed as the sixth patriarch. The Tibetan master, Kala Rinpoche, spoke of awakening as like a flash of lightning in the dark night. You're feeling your way along a mountain path, and suddenly there's a flash of lightning, and all of a sudden you can see ahead briefly. So now you know where you need to go. But it's just a flash. It's not the full, complete daylight of awareness. Hawkwind himself wrote that he had 19 major Kensho experiences and countless minor ones before his final awakening when he was in his 50s. And he started practicing when he was a kid. Before he even got ordained, he was doing Zazen. At any rate, the Chinese master, after some time and a further quite deep awakening experience, confirmed that Bankei had gone quite deep. And from then on, he still continued to do Zazen, and that's also another point that's important to recognize. Again, we had this idea that you go and you do Zazen. Kepa Roshi himself, when he went to Japan, he said he was going to grab Kensho and run. The assumption being that was sufficient to ease his life. And yet he continued practicing the whole rest of his life. That was very, very, very clear to me. Despite all the derogatory comments made by particular Japanese Zen, I'm not sure I could call them masters actually, because at least two of them have been shown up to be not complete in their own practice. A Kapla Roshi dedicated himself to continuing to open through his entire life. I was his attendant and his secretary a number of times, and also spent extended periods of time with him twice in Mexico when he was writing his books. And so I had a first-hand view. Sure, he had warts, don't we all? But as soon as he saw where he was being dysfunctional, it vanished. That he never did it again. It was quite remarkable to see. So Bankei continued to practice the whole rest of his life. And his teaching centered around what he called the unborn. That photon, the unborn mind, unborn and undying. If it's not born, it can't die. Who is that one? That's the same as Rinzai's true person of no rank. So we're being met with this phenomena, or whatever you want to call it, from many different avenues. from quantum physics, from Bankei, from the Buddha, and from all the Zen masters down the line, and other spiritual masters as well. The unborn, this is our true nature. Coming into being when called for, dissolving back into nothing, into emptiness, when that instigation is dissolved. Again, this is why intention is so important in our lives. To make a point of focusing on an intention to comprehend the true nature of reality, no matter what it takes, to liberate yourself, and in the process you will be liberating all life. This is the most incredible thing, and yet the most simple, the most ordinary thing a human being can do, and the most valuable thing for humanity. So many people have spent so many hours, so many days, so many weeks, so many months, so many years, so many lifetimes searching for that most profound truth. And many of them persisting, awakened to it deeply enough that it was life transforming. For Jacques Le Seran, it was life transforming. For Flora Courtois, it was life transforming. For us as well, it can be life transforming. It's a little sticky trying to let go of those habit patterns of assuming a self. And a metaphor comes to mind. Many, many years ago, I read one space age story, short story. And it was about a rocket ship. This is well before we had gone to the moon and knew a little bit more about rocket ships. But at any rate, this rocket ship went to this unknown planet. And there were four people on the rocket ship, two couples, actually. They weren't coupled, but they ended up becoming coupled, it sounds like. You have to have some level of romance to entertain the folks. And it crash landed. And it crash landed in such a way that there was no repairing it and getting back home. So these four people were all scientists, and they decided what they would do would be to clone themselves. The only thing that was there on this planet were lots of puddles. That was it. That was what was in the... And microscopic plants and animals and so on. So they cloned themselves into little tiny beings who they seeded into these puddles. And then, of course, the assumption is that then they died. But these clones survived, and one intrepid version of themselves, if you want to call it that, got really curious about what was at the top of the water. And he climbed up this microscopic plant, which reached up to the top of the water, the puddle. And he struggled against the, what is it called? There's a scientific name for the pressure that holds the top of the water together. He struggled against it and finally broke through. That was the end of the story. But it's like that in our practice. We're struggling against the, what is it?
Meniscus.
Surface tension.
Yes, the surface tension. Thank you. Struggling against the surface tension of our assumptions, of our conditioning. But like that minuscule space traveler, we too can break free of it. Break free of it is kind of a, not really a very descriptive name to put to it. It's more like melting it. The expression in Zen is to see through. When we recognize something as false, we see through it and it loses its power to direct us. And that's what happens as we extend the out-breath over and over and over again. If we continue to reach through that out-breath, tuning into our body the entire time, experiencing the energy, the physical experience of breathing out. No pictures necessary, and certainly no stories. We do it over and over again, searching for what is beyond our ordinary assumptions about ourselves. And we do this over and over and over again, and we begin to make inroads into it. It may not be obvious right away, and in fact, interesting thing about this breath practice is that it's rare that there appears to be a one-to-one connection of the results. But we find ourselves at other times when we're not necessarily on the cushion, suddenly responding differently from how we usually do and surprising ourselves. That is because of the extended breath practice and the ability it allows to see through our assumptions and our conditioning. And gradually we become free if we persist. And that's the tricky part. We're up against habit pattern. We're up against all kinds of things we do to distract ourselves from that work. We get sleepy. We get resistant. We find we've got a million other far more important things to do than going to the cushion. Or we find ourselves in a wonderful place in our life where we find no motivation to go to the cushion. These makyo, these devilish phenomena that we throw up in our path to prevent our letting go of the status quo, are as myriad as we are. And unless we're really sharp to them, they're highly effective. If we persist, the result is amazing. This practice would not have continued for all these millennia, really, if it didn't work to offer something truly valuable. And it does. No matter how long it takes, doesn't really matter, because the honing is going on all the time, regardless of what it feels like. And in fact, sometimes it can feel like we're absolutely going backwards, not forward in this practice. And yet, underneath it all, we are. Things are gradually being let go. Often they'll come in clumps where you'll have a particularly difficult time trying to focus your mind, trying to bring yourself to the cushion, trying to dive into this practice which seems impossible. And then suddenly, the results of what had gone on underground as you just kept on trying come to the fore. And suddenly there's a bit more space in your life. There's a bit more ease in your life. There's a bit more freedom. And that actually is a far more dangerous place than the times of resistance. Because when you've gone through a period of resistance, struggling against it, and then suddenly it eases, it's so tempting just to sit back and enjoy that ease. And what we end up doing is treading water in our practice, not going forward. If we're not careful, we will drift backwards. So no matter what it feels like, to keep going, because it's going to make an incredible positive difference in your life. There were times Kepler Roshi said where he felt like he was trying to swim through wet cement. It can feel like that. And then the other thing that can come up is we begin to see more clearly where we are caught. And that's not necessarily a pleasant experience. Oh my God, did I really say that with that tone of voice? Did I really do that? And regret, remorse comes up. And if we're fortunate and don't try to shove it away and stick it under the carpet somewhere or back in the closet. What that does is the next time the habit pattern comes up to move in that direction, it's like a big flashing stop sign comes up. It says, really? You want to do it again? You really, really, really want to do that again? And it's so easy not to. And each time that comes up, it's weaker and weaker, and eventually it just doesn't come up anymore. Of course, then it unveils lots of other more subtle stuff beneath it. This practice really is quite amazing. And as a friend of mine wrote, it's truly bodhisattvic. First, it shows us where we're caught. And then it sets us free. So I leave you with that. Thank you, Bonke. Thank you, the scientists that did the slit experiment. Thank you for all the people, all the centuries of people who searched for the truth and found it. And pave the way for us to do it. And I thank you all for being here, because together we are so much more powerful in doing this practice than when we try to do it alone. So we'll stop now and recite the four vows.